I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where I speak with creative entrepreneurs, artists, and other insanely interesting people to hear their stories, learn about their molding moments, tipping points, and spectacular takeoffs. In this episode of The Unmistakable Creative, I speak with Mike Rostowski. Mike is making the world a better place, one man at a time. In this revealing chat about grief, loss, and growth, he talks to me about how our relationships can become one of our greatest engines for personal growth. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is brought to you by FreshBooks, the simple accounting solution for business owners who want to skip the headaches of tax time. No more hunting for receipts, digging for invoices, or going through records one at a time. When I started working as a freelancer, my process for invoicing clients was disorganized, it was manual, and it was messy. Then I discovered FreshBooks. With a click of a button, I could have an invoice to a client and get paid faster. It was kind of a no-brainer. For a limited time, you can try it free for 60 days. That's 2 months to see how much more efficient it will make the process of invoicing clients. You can check them out at getfreshbooks.com. And when you get to the how did you hear about us section, make sure you enter the words unmistakable creative. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show. Mike, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative.
Hey, Srini. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my my pleasure. You've actually long been requested by many of our listeners. And you and I have known each other for quite some time. We seem to have a lot of overlapping circles. So, Mike, tell me a bit about yourself, your background, and your story, and how that has led you to the work that you're doing today.
So currently, I've been traveling the world full time for about 2 years. I sold everything I own in March 2012, and I work with high performing men. I'm a coach for mainly entrepreneurs. Like, most of my clients are entrepreneurs, and I'm just really dedicated to this space of like men's work. And I know we'll probably talk more about it. And my business is primarily one-on-one coaching, and I also do some live events. And I'm doing my first like really big live event in a couple weeks in San Diego called the Conference for Men. So my life is pretty sweet right now, but it's it hasn't been for most of my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to think of like where to start. I've actually been introduced as like a sex expert before, which is the most like surreal, crazy thing. Because it's funny, because for most of my life, just women and sex and relationships and intimacy was just such a pain point. And I had no idea what I was doing. And a lot of that was due to my upbringing. So I was raised one of Jehovah's Witnesses. So kind of in a very like strict conservative, religious, I mean, very loving. Like, I had amazing parents growing up, but just sort of like in that kind of tight container. So I didn't really get to experience a lot when I was young, and I, you know, only hung out with my friends from church, and I like really wasn't allowed to do anything that a lot of the other kids did, and especially around, you know, like sex and girls. Like, I didn't date at all just throughout high school. Like, had my first kiss, like first super awkward kiss as a senior in high school. And, you know, I was just taught that, you know, I'm not supposed to date unless I'm going to get married. So I had just a lot of, I guess, godly fear around women, and then just fear because I had no experience at all. So it's been just a really interesting process of, over the past decade, like I've been trying to just figure women out and just trying to figure out, you know, how to get into the hearts and minds of women. And I, you know, as probably like in my early 20s, I would just like read my girlfriend's Cosmo magazines, like just to be like, what are these strange alien creatures thinking about? Women were like a whole different world to me. And I just put a lot of space into just like getting that piece figured out, because I had so much pain in my life around it, just because I, you know, like girls would ask me out, and I was so painfully shy that like I couldn't even look at them in the eyes. And my friends would, you know, like my guy friends would make fun of me because I was really into powerlifting and weightlifting at the time. So they'd be like, Mike, you're like the biggest dude like in our school, and a girl talks to you and you become a 7-year old. Like what's wrong with you? And it was just, I was just really shy. And I had so many like beliefs and thoughts about women. And I just thought like, I wasn't supposed to talk to them. And then when they did, I just totally shut down. So I put a lot of time into studying relationships, and I've read like every book on relationships written for men, every book on relationships written for women. And now like today, as I look at just life and as I look at a lot of the work that I've done, to me, it's like, I think your relationship is your greatest personal growth engine. And I think I've fallen into talking a lot about like relationships and intimacy, because oftentimes like that's where we get challenged the most. And I think how you show up in your relationship is how you show up in life. So, oftentimes I take guys like just really deep into that. And, you know, it's like how you show up in sex is how you show up in the world. And, you know, oftentimes just by changing something little, it has nothing to do with like sex or the bedroom, and it has so much more of it's like how you show up like in the boardroom, or how you show up on stage, or how you show up in an interview, or how you show up when you like walk into a room. So right now, I'm just really dedicated to serving men. And that's because when I was young, there was nothing for me. And I spent pretty much all of my 20s just wasting a lot of time and like drinking a lot and playing video games and just trying to like numb the pain of like not knowing what to do or like what the next steps are. Instead of doing things to better myself, or instead of doing things to like make the world a better place. And I just was really not on purpose, and just kind of floating sort of aimlessly through life. Like, even though I was doing all the things that I was supposed to do, like I worked for 5 years and then I got my MBA and then I got this like high paying corporate job. I was in a leadership development program for a Fortune 50 healthcare firm, and I was doing all the stuff that I wanted to do, but just still really, really wasn't that, you know, like satisfied with how I was spending my time. And for me, like the big piece of my story, and I've talked a lot about it, like everything changed on June 4th, 2011. And for one thing, I went to the World Domination Summit, or I went to World Domination Summit, Chris Guillebeau's conference, and I went to the first one. And at the time, I was just a normal guy working a corporate job, and I read Chris's blog, and I saw this thing that just seemed really cool. And you know, even as I look back, like I don't know why I bought a ticket to that conference. It was I wasn't an entrepreneur. I wasn't, you know, like running a business or running a nonprofit. Just everyone else at the conference just seemed way cooler than me. But for some reason, I wanted to go and I wanted to be a part of it. And when I went to WDS, I remember just meeting all these people, and, you know, so many of them were younger than me, and they were living the most just remarkable lives, just, you know, businesses, living all over the world. They're, Chris's tribe has a lot of like digital nomads. So there are people just, you know, living out of a backpack, like running a successful, you know, like running successful businesses and, you know, like huge organizations. And they were really nice too. And, you know, they weren't like, oh, I'm so cool, look at my business. It was more of the energy of like, yeah, like I did this and it's hard and it's taken a lot of work, but, you know, it's like, I'd love to jump on Skype with you, or I'd love to show you exactly how I did it. Like, I'd love to share everything with you. And it was kind of like taking the red pill in the Matrix. Like I didn't even know that this world existed. I have never even dreamed of like being an entrepreneur. And I remember thinking, I've never said this in an interview, but like, I've always thought that like entrepreneurs have something special, or I always would like, you know, I'd have friends, parents who were entrepreneurs, and I think, man, those guys are so brave, or like they just have something that I don't have. Like there's no way I could ever do that. You know, there's no way I could ever go out on my own and sell a product or sell a service. But there was something around just being in that atmosphere and just meeting person after person after person and just hearing their stories and hearing them say, you know, I literally don't know what I'm doing, but I'm making it up as I go. And my business has been growing every year and I'm still afraid. And at times it's really, really tough, but I wouldn't change it for the world. So like in that moment, just my mind was literally blown. Like my coming out of that weekend, my brain was bigger because of all of the possibilities that I could, you know, live in my life. So easily like one of the best experiences of my life. And then I had the worst experience of my life, like 5 hours before the conference started. So my mom passed away unexpectedly in her sleep. I got the call. I was in the hostel in this like room with like 8 other guys sleeping in bunk beds. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning and kind of smelled like a locker room in there. And I kept like my phone kept blowing up and I was getting text messages and I finally answered. And my brother was just like crying and my dad was like in the background. And they said like, mom died. And it was so unexpected. Like my mom had been sick for a while and she had chronic fatigue syndrome and she was just kind of tired and depressed for a lot of like the last, I don't know, probably last decade of her life, but it was just completely unexpected. And, when I got the call, it's like, I didn't even really cry. Like I was just sort of just in shock and I got the call and, I sort of immediately went into that like protector coach mode. Cause I've always been someone who's just like held space for other people. And I, you know, made sure my dad and my brother were okay and talked them through it. And then I went back to sleep. And then in the morning, like 5 hours later, I walked to the conference and I sort of already told you what happened at the conference. So for me, it was just this, just complete destruction of my life. Like it was like the train completely goes off the tracks. And then from that moment, just like life has never been the same because there's no way that it could be the same. And, I talk a lot about death, like in my writing and in my coaching with men, because for me, like death has been one of my greatest teachers. And, you know, like I know it's a theme that, you know, we even talked about at the weekend at the Instigator Experience, just die empty, right? Just live fully and die empty. And once my mom passed away, just, I had no other choice because I knew it and I felt it and I was like, just shit. Like I, like this is not a dress rehearsal. And, you know, what am I doing? I'm working this corporate job and I make a ton of money that like, I don't even need. And like, I'm spending a bunch of it on just like wine and clothes and stuff to numb the pain of me, like not doing something that turns me on or like not doing something that like makes the world a better place. And then from that moment on, just everything shifted. Just, I had no other option, but to live a conscious life, but because I knew that death is around the corner. So from there I, you know, lasted 6 more months in corporate. Then I left my corporate job, sold everything I own. I took a full year off and I don't talk about this a lot too, but I took a year off cause honestly, like I was sad and I didn't know what the hell to do. And I had a lot of savings and I just wanted to, you know, I've been living life kind of like I have like a month to live, I think, for the past couple of years, just cause I just don't want to waste any time and I just want to show up really big. So I took a year off to all of 2012, just to do stuff that makes me happy. And I did like hundreds of hours of pro bono coaching work. I supported a bunch of friends like in their projects And the big thing is my brother and I just drove around the country doing volunteer work, and we created this passion project called a Summer to Serve, where we kind of made this idea of taking the Great American Road Trip and adding like a Peace Corps element, and we just drove all over the U.S. doing volunteer work, and we volunteered with kids, and we built houses, and we volunteered at like this amusement park for disabled children, and we dug ditches, we shoveled horse poop in Des Moines, Iowa, just like all these different experiences, and it was probably, even to this day, like one of just the best experiences of my life. And I just did stuff that makes me happy. But over the course of that, I was out in the world a lot, and I was going to a lot of events and South by Southwest and World Domination Summit and just helping a lot of people. And at the end of 2012, it wasn't my intention at all, but I built a lot of social capital just all over the country. And, I had a lot of people who I had helped, and I sort of had a coaching business on my hands. So I, January 2013, I launched my business, and it's been, you know, and it's been paying the bills since, and it's just been growing and growing and getting better and better. And sometime in there, I believe a year ago is when I took a stand for men, and I rebranded myself as the men's coach. I just started writing more about men and just focusing on men's issues. And that's because as I traveled all over the world and just met tons of people and hosted a lot of meetups, I kept hearing the same pain points from men. And the two are, one, I just don't have any friends anymore. Like I don't have any like real friends, because I'm on the path. And when I say I'm on the path, these men are either on a spiritual path or they're on the path of entrepreneurship, but they're doing work in their lives, and they want more from lives, and they're actually doing it. Like they're showing up and they're just growing, and, you know, and they're not the same person that they were a year ago or 2 years ago. And as they look around, some of their friends just like aren't growing with them. And some of their friends might even like make fun of them or, dude, like you're going to some conference, like that's weird. Or like you go to a men's group to talk about your problems. Like it's pretty gay, bro. You know, like their friends just don't get it, because they don't have the same values of growth or of getting more out of life. So that's one thing, is that just, and it's funny that almost the more successful that a man gets, it's like the higher chance he has of being lonely, which is crazy. But if, you know, that's just what I found as I talk to guys. And then the second thing is that just men have a complete inability to ask for help. and I still, like, with all the work that I've done and even coaching men, like there's times where I could be asking for more help. And what that does is it sort of makes it, as a man, like grows as a man and becomes a leader in his community or grows his business, just the stresses like pile on top of it more and more and more, and until there's that day where he's just like, I just cannot handle this. And then he has like a mental breakdown, or maybe that's when like the midlife crisis kicks in, or that's when he might commit suicide. So the suicide rates for men are like 3 to 4 times that of women. And a big part of it is just, like we're programmed to not ask for help. We're programmed to be a man and suck it up and like never show weakness. And, you know, it's like, you can do it all on your own. And like, you know, just all that just stuff that we either hear explicitly, like from our fathers or from just mentors or from someone, or that's just how every other man operates. So we just kind of learn by example of, you know what, like, I just have to do this all on my own. So that's, you know, March 2013, that's when I really started taking a stand for men. And, Yeah, and business has been amazing, and it's been really, really fun, and incredibly rewarding to work with guys from just all over, because there's not a lot of resources for men, and women are doing the work in droves. Like, Oprah is like the personal development channel now, and you know, there's so many, like, most coaches are women, and there's like all these inner goddess events and like emerging women's leaders and women's conferences. And I'm all for powerful women. Like, all my friends are powerful women, and like, I only date powerful women, but there's an imbalance, right? If women are doing work and growing emotionally and spiritually and financially, you know, like, I know I have so many friends who are just badass entrepreneurs, who are female. But then if the men aren't doing the work, then there's just more and more guys who are either like in marriages or in relationships asking like, what am I here for? and they're just not really showing up very well. And there's a lot of just like weird dynamics now in the world around relationships and guys like really just like not really knowing what to do, or guys feeling like they're being left behind, or guys even just like wondering like what's my role in this relationship. So so that's a bit about my story and what I do. And I kind of like that you didn't jump in, because I feel like I've shared stuff that I haven't shared in some other interview. So thanks for just I guess holding space for me to ramble for a bit.
Well, that's been known to happen here from time to time. you know, it's funny. I didn't want to interrupt you, because I really was, you know, listening to so much of what you had to say, and I had so many questions that I had to start writing them down, or otherwise I was going to lose track because you had so much material there. You know, as you might expect, I want to go back to the very beginning of this. I want to start looking kind of at your upbringing. I think it's really an interesting dichotomy of being brought up in this very strict sort of religious background and sort of feeling this need to escape it. And the question that I have for you around that is not necessarily about the religious background, but, you know, we have this tendency to look into our past in order to determine our future, and somehow you transcended that. And I want to talk about that. You know, how do you let go of the past so that you don't look into the future and keep seeing your past?
So I think oftentimes we try and do the opposite of what our parents are. So if my parents were like really progressive, loving, spiritual people, I'd probably be an accountant somewhere. I find that funny. I just feel like we always just go against whatever our parents are. But in regards to turning around the past, for me, the thing that comes up for me has been like learning to look at my past through the lens of love and compassion. So I'll give one example. Like I was a really bad kid. I got in a lot of trouble, and I've been arrested twice, and I've I lied a lot. Like I started the habit of lying because I didn't want to lose my parents' love, and I didn't want to be like exiled from my religion and from the congregation. So I just started lying, and you know, all my friends lied. We all lied to our parents. And, I've talked to a lot of people about this, you know, people who grew up with really strict parents. Like, you just start lying because that's better than like losing your parents' love, or that's better than like, there's these fears when you grow up in a religious household or like with really strict parents. Like there's fears that like, if I don't lie to my parents, I'm going to be like thrown out in the streets, or, I'm like, they're just not going to love me. And when you're 13 years old, that's just not an option. So you lie. And when you start a habit, right? Like if you start a habit of flossing your teeth or working out in the mornings, like you're probably going to keep doing it. So if you start a habit of lying, then you're going to keep lying. And for me, the lies just continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, so my first girlfriend that I finally had as a senior in high school, like, kept her a secret from my parents for 9 months. And like the first time I like smoked weed, or the first time I drank, you know, the first time I like finally had sex when I was almost 20, and just everything, just doing kind of like that normal kid exploration stuff. I couldn't tell my parents, so I had to lie. So I developed this like double life where I had my life with my parents and with my church friends, and then I had my actual life, the one where I enjoyed being a little more open and exploring. And it's not a, like, it's not like a good or bad thing. It's just that I'm not saying like drinking and having sex is cool. I'm just saying that like, that's just, there's things that I think every child wants to explore a bit. And when we're given a message from our parents of like, you can't do that, then we're going to lie. And then you're going to keep lying, and then you're going to have a habit. So there was a point in my life, I'd say in my teens and even early 20s, that like when given a choice, I would consciously choose the wrong path. I would consciously choose like lie, cheat, or steal. And I would look at the people who are honest and think like, those guys are chumps, or like, those guys are suckers. Like, why would they not like steal their clothes from the mall? Or why would they not like steal money from the register at work? Or why would they not cheat on a test in college? Like, that's silly. Like, they're actually studying. But I was fooling myself, because I was under so much stress that Anytime my dad called me on my cell phone, or anytime my girlfriend called me, I mean, I cheated on a bunch of girlfriends too. Like, anytime like anyone called me or looked me in the eyes, I would feel sick and nauseous, because I would feel afraid that they would find out that I was lying. So I was under just a lot of pain, and I actually found one of my old journals a while ago from when I was 19, and it was kind of like reading like a serial killer journal, or like I feel like the Columbine kids probably had journals that read like mine, just really dark. And like, I'd rhyme the words like lie and like cry and die a lot. And it was just like the darkest, like dark, crazy person poetry. And I wrote a lot about lying, and just like, I don't want to lie. Like, I just want to die. Like, why do I always cry? And I was just totally trapped, and I was trapped in this like web of lies, and I didn't like it, and I was in a ton of pain. And so then I was a cutter for a while, and I like numbed out with, you know, alcohol and drugs. And I think I've spent like most of my 20s drunk. And I was, you know, and on the outside, someone would look at me and be like, Mike was a horrible person, or Mike was a bad person. He cheated on his girlfriend, or he stole money from work. But so I just told that whole story because you asked me, how do I get over my past? So I've learned to look at everything through the lens of love and compassion. And I'll never forget, I was on a coaching call, and I told that story because for the longest time, I had a ton of guilt and shame around being a horrible person for most of my life. And my friend Angela, who was my coaching buddy in the Martha Beck coaching program that I went through, she asked that question. She was like, so you just told me that story of how horrible you were and all the bad things you did and how you hurt people. Could you retell that story, but while being as loving and compassionate to yourself as possible? And then I started, and I was weeping. I was just crying. And I had never looked at my past self with love at all. And I remember I was just crying, and I was like, you know what? Like, he was just a kid who was just trying to find love and like trying to do the best that he could. And he didn't have money to like buy clothes, so he had to steal them. And he started lying from such a young age that like, that's just what he did. And that's like the only thing that he knew how to do. And he finally like broke the habit, you know, like in his mid-20s because he finally learned about the power of integrity. And but yeah, like he wasn't a horrible person. He was just a really hurt kid. Like he was a kid in a great deal of pain. So I take my clients through that a lot. Like anytime they're judging themselves for like doing bad things or doing horrible things, I just say, can you look at yourself through the lens of love and compassion? Or anytime, you know, like everyone hates their parents for some reason. It's either my parents like weren't around, or my parents grew up without any money, or my parents worked too much and my parents gave me too much money. And now I feel like, you know, it's like, I wish I had to struggle more. I mean, everyone has something that some sort of beef with their parents. And I always ask them like, you know, can you retell that story? But using the lens of love and compassion, like, can you be as loving and compassionate to your parents as possible? And then they always just break down and just say, I mean, they always say my mom did that she could, and and she drank so much because she was in great pain, and you know, she grew up in a foster home and she was working two jobs when we were young. And like, she gave her everything, mm-hmm. like she gave every cell of her being to us as kids. And, and then I'll say, all right, well then why are you angry at your mom? Like, do you want to give her a call and tell her all that stuff? And, it's like, how do you get over the past is look at it through the lens of love and compassion. And it just, like, love just like transmutes pain, and it creates an awareness, and it just like dissolves all those like bullshit stories, and it just completely flips things around. And and for me, it's like I've used like love to flip around so many stories from my past, and to, you know, times when, you know, like a girlfriend broke up with me, or when something, you know, horrible happened, or when I was really embarrassed, or when, you know, I was scared. And it sounds like just like mushy, and it sounds like some like BS, like something you'll see on a Instagram photo, like love is the answer, but like it truly is. Like it truly is. It's not just like a refrigerator magnet. Like it's, if you're able to like look into those painful stories, and then through that lens of love and compassion at all of the characters in that story, mm-hmm. whether it's you or your ex-wife or your parents, like you will have a breakthrough, and you will see that like, wow, just everyone in that moment was trying their absolute best. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of parents, let's talk about your experience, at WDS, because it's kind of an interesting dichotomy that you brought up earlier of the best experience of your life and the worst experience of life happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the question that comes from me for that, and this is something I've asked a lot of people, is usually grief and traumatic loss can be a huge catalyst for looking at your life and saying, how could I not live fully after something like this? But, you know, it's funny because I think that any one of us, we know that it could be over at any moment. But I don't think that we really, really see that. Like, I don't think we can really see that until something happens. And I'm curious if you can bring about that kind of a catalyst without having the trauma. Or how do you get yourself to that point? I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's weird because I think parental death is one of those things, or parental mortality is something that I've thought about, and I realize it's an inevitable part of life and that we must be built to be able to go through it. And yet it seems like it would be the most horrific, painful thing I could have ever imagine.
Mm-hmm. So stuff that I've done is like, I've walked clients through exercises, like where I take them to like a deep meditation, and I just say, you know, like, you've been given like 30 days to live, by the doctor, and like really sink into that, like really sink into it. And, really feel into it. And what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to spend the next 30 days? And yeah, and they'll like, and if they really allow themselves to go there, like they'll definitely have, like they'll grieve and they'll have a big emotional release. And then they'll just talk about all the stuff that they would do. And it's, you know, it's, there's always something with parents. Like everyone says, I'll call my mom and dad and tell them I love them, 'cause I haven't done that in a while. Or I'll call my brother and say, I'm sorry for whatever, for ABC, 'cause we haven't talked for this many years. And, you know, I'll, you know, probably, you know, who knows? Like sometimes it's like, I'll go on a road trip, or I'll go skydiving, or, you know, like I'll donate money, or I'll have a big party at my house for all my friends, or I'll just like, I'll spend the whole day in bed with like, with my partner, just like having sex and like watching videos on YouTube, or just like all this stuff comes up. And then I'll tell them, all right, cool. Well, that's your homework. Go and do that, 'cause that's what you actually want to do. It's not any of the stuff that you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I've done some, yeah. And I've been taken into that place in different workshops and like different men's groups and retreats and things that I've done. You know, like I was in this thing where like they kind of led us through this like death meditation, and it was really like, I kind of felt like I died. Like I felt like I died. We were laying in Shavasana, or, you know, like corpse pose, which is how you end up after a yoga class. So just laying on the ground, and the facilitator was saying, just, you know, like imagine yourself dying, and then like your skin melting off and your internal organs like sliding out, and you're, you know, like you're just a skeleton, and you're like just a heart and a skeleton, and just, you know, just like really deeper and deeper and deeper, and just almost just like imagining that place of death. And then he kind of kept us there for a while, and then he brought us back into our bodies, and I said, all right, you're laying down on a mat, like in the room, in a house in California, which is in the US, in the world. And then he's like sent us outside, you know, just go ahead. And as you come back into your bodies, like go outside and like experience life. And when I walked outside of that room, it was like being born. It was just everything, the sun in my face, and like the smell of like the mountain air and trees, everything was so rich. And in that moment, I was just so happy to be alive. Mm-hmm. So there's ways of doing it. I mean, other stuff off the top of my head, I have a friend who runs retreats, and this sounds crazy and super edgy, but it was really powerful. They actually dug graves and they led these guys like blindfold. And they like lay them down and then like put a piece of plywood over and was like putting dirt on them, and they're, you know, and they read their name. So they'd be like, all right, here lies, you know, Mike Rostowski. And he was a good man. And the person would be like laying in their own grave and just like hearing what like other people have to say about them. Just like really experiencing that feeling. And, you know, all the guys who experienced that were like, wow, that was just a life changing exercise. And, you know, and then just being comfortable with death, like being in this country. So like, I'm going to ask you a question in a second. So like in this country, like we are so afraid of death that, like we do everything to like stay young, right? Like Botox and all the surgery. We like, anytime our parents get old, we ship them off to like an old folks home, and we don't even want to see death. Like the fact that like faces of death is a thing just shows like how afraid that we are of death. And even talking about death, like I feel like there's been times when I've talked about it and I don't know, at a mixer or something, and people will look at me like I just like took all my clothes off, like I'm some sort of crazy person. And I think in this country, like there's so, like, we were so afraid of death, but, in other countries, that's not the case. Like, right. So Srini, like even in India, I was just talking to a friend, like, aren't there just places where like people go to die? And like whether it, is it a river or like, am I totally off or?
Well, I know they throw their ashes in the Ganges. That's an Indian tradition, but You know, it's interesting. You're bringing up death, obviously, based on kind of the weekend that you and I have had. That it's there. I think it's one of those things where you have to realize that this is really just a one shot deal. Like, you know, AJ Leon always talks about this as your one and only life. What are you going to do with it? And you're right. I mean, I think we have a strange sort of fear of death, and yet it's kind of one of those inevitable truths that it's coming. I think the only difference between somebody who has a terminal illness and somebody like you or me is we just don't know the date on which it's going to happen. And somehow we live like we do. You know, I mean, if you remember Meg Warden, she said, you know, it's such a horrible thing to wait. You know, you all have a life sentence on this planet, and to wait until you leave it in order to be free is probably the worst possible thing, which is what I think about. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's such a complicated thing. And yet, you know, I think that if we sit around waiting for the catalyst for our life to change, for somebody to come and push us or something to happen, somebody said, I don't remember who it was, somebody on the show said, you know, you don't have to wait for your life to suck in order to start to change it. And yet that's what so many people do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of us are really comfortable. Like we live better than the kings of ancient history. Like we can walk into a supermarket and get like 50 different types of toothpaste and like food from all over the world. And, fruits that aren't even in season, just like the amount of choice, we live better than the kings of ancient history. So for a lot of us, like we're just so comfortable that, you know, it's like, why would I do any like work on myself, or why would I, you know, it's like life is good. Mm-hmm. Which isn't a bad thing. Like I think if you're always like choosing growth, like if you're always uncomfortable, then, you know, I think there's a balance of growth and contentment. Mm-hmm. I think the reason why coaching is such a booming profession, and the reason why like we're talking about conscious living, and, you know, like, and the reason why, like, you know, podcasts like this even exist, is because all of our basic needs are met, like on that, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So, you know, so then the next step is self-actualization. So that's why that's why I can do the work that I can do. Cause there's a lot of guys out there who have everything taken care of. Like all their finances are in order and they have a family, but like, they just still aren't happy. So let's dive in and let's kind of dive in and, you know, figure out what's really going on there. Mm-hmm. I do agree. And, people often get thrown into great change from pain, and there's just not, I mean, there is pain, but it's like, where's my iPhone charger? Or like, I'm out of protein powder. Like, shit, I have to like substitute something for my morning smoothie. Like those are the problems that we have today. Mm-hmm. So for me as the practice, like, and it sounds crazy, but like I purposely throw myself into uncomfortable stuff all the time. And it's made me just like a better man. And I know, like, I'm not going to be doing this like all my life. Like, I'm not going to be living all over the world and going to really intense workshops and like, just like writing about my entire life on the internet and, just constantly choosing growth. Like I have a hunch in 5 years, I'll probably just be like a really happy, content dad somewhere. You know, I'll be pretty like normal, in terms of my like living situation and like what I'm doing. But like all this work that I'm doing now is just preparing me to be like a better husband and a better father and a better leader in the community. Because if I didn't go through all this stuff, like if I didn't dive deep into like death and money and sex and like all this stuff that I have triggers around and I have shame around and weird beliefs around, then these beliefs are going to carry, you know, with me through the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So better to do it now when I'm a young man and to do it now, like when I don't have a family to worry about. And I mean, I think better to do it now is just always my, like, that's my motto. It's like, like I can get this shit figured out in like 20 years, or I can just face it head first and do it now and have it not be a problem or not be a hang up again. Mm-hmm. So for people listening right now, it's like, why would you not get that piece figured out? Like whatever it is, like your business or your sex life or your relationship with your parents or just like whatever is causing you pain. You can either ignore it or you can face it head first and like dive into it with love. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why not? You know, it's like, this is the one life that like the only thing that I know that's for certain, right? Because people have all sorts of different beliefs on heaven and the afterlife and like past lives. But like the only thing I know for certain is that I have this life. And like, I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Mike, let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to start talking about the work that you do with men in particular. You know, one of the things that has always kind of intrigued me about you and why I wanted to have you on the show is that you've shed light on a conversation that nobody wants to have, especially men. You've gotten them to have it, and you have also transcended a lot of the stigma that has typically been around this kind of work, largely a byproduct of things like Neil Strauss's book, The Game, and you know, men's magazines and the way, you know, the way women are almost objectified in all of this, especially in pop culture. And somehow through your work, you've transcended all of that, which has always fascinated me. And that's the part that intrigued me because, you know, I remember telling you last time we spoke when we didn't get the right audio that, you know, Manish jokingly calls you the men's coach for women. Because there's something really, I think, about your work that tends to appeal to women as much as it does men, even though it's geared towards men. So I really would love to hear, one, how that's happened, you know, and two, I didn't get to really ask you about your year off of service, but kind of how that has made itself into this work and how it's influenced and shaped how you show up in the world and how you work with people.
Yeah, so I think something that makes me different from some of the guys who teach men how to be more successful with women is I love women. Like I've always been that guy in a room full of women. So my mom like loved the hell out of me, and I had such a great just connection and relationship with her. And just like so much of who I am as a man, I owe to her. Like all my academic success and just like the way that I show up in the world, I owe a lot of that to my mom. And then I became a yoga teacher, you know, when I was 25. So, you know, it's like only do it in a room full of women again. And I'm a Martha Beck life coach, and I worked in human resources in the corporate world. And I just love women. And I think some of the guys that like get into the pickup space, like kind of hate women and not that they're bad guys, but like they're carrying a wound that happened maybe when they were young and like their moms like walked out on them, you know, like cheated on their dad, or maybe they had some girl that cheated on them, or some, you know, ex-wife or some woman that like broke up with them, and they're carrying that wound like into their work. And, you know, and so when they teach guys how to be more successful with women, it's like, it's through manipulation and it's through like, just like, I mean, I can't even just like, just, I don't even want to say borderline. It's just through like really manipulative tactics, like manipulative psychological tactics to like get women to sleep with them. Mm-hmm. And that just sucks. Like that just does no good in the world. So I think that it's like, how am I different? It's like, well, like I actually love women, and I like, yeah, like that's the difference. And I am something that I'm really proud of today. It's like, I have really great connections with all women, like not like just as a species, like in general. I mean, there's some women, like, it's not like I have the perfect relationship with all women, but just, I have a lot of just like female friends and I'm able to like deeply connect with like my friends' girlfriends and my friends' wives, just like without creeping on them. Mm-hmm. And that's something I talk about to my clients a lot of like you have to learn to like modulate your sexual energy, you know? So, I think for most of my life, I wasn't able to. So like anytime I talk to a girl, like she would kind of feel, cause women, their limbic systems are, you know, like way more developed than ours and their intuition. And they can just tell when a guy is standing in front of, like when a man just like wants to sleep with them, like they can just like kind of feel it in their body. And I think just by being able to like learn to modulate that, like it's opened up the whole world of women to me. Like I can show up in a way I can, you know, it's like, I can show up in a way that like, I guess like my cock's kind of like turned off, like the energetics, like around there, it's like, it's kind of like turned off. But instead I just show up with like an open heart. So like I show up like a brother or like one of their gay friends or something. And what's cool about that is like, I'm able to just have really awesome friendships and I'm able to have women in my life who, like there's women in my life who like, I can say like, I love you, but it's like, they're like my sisters and it's just great to have like that support from the feminine. And there's a lot of women who do support me and they like support me as a human being and they support me like in my work and they give me good feedback too. And they help me like when I'm not showing up well. My greatest teachers have been like just really badass women who call me out on my stuff and the same with men. You know, my best friends and the people who I hold like, you know, the most dear to my heart are the ones who tell me when I'm messing up and they're the ones that hold me to the highest standard. And it kind of makes me think of like watching you and Greg on stage and, you know, when you're like, man, I hate these Tuesday meetings and Greg loves them, but you know, it's like they move my business forward. And, you know, I think a lot of the reason, why the instigator experience, why the event was just such an amazing success is like, you guys just complement each other so well. So for a guy, I'm thankful for people who helped me show up better. And I have a lot of people like that in my life, which I think just helps me play on a bigger stage and like helps me do better work. And I think that like just helps me kind of like stick out in a field where there's, you know, honestly, like there's some guys who are just like, give me the creeps. Like there's guys who do this work on like how to have bulletproof confidence with women and like the 10 magic bullets to get in her pants. And like, I've met some of these guys and they're just like weird. Like they're just like, they're just really creepy and strange. And like, yeah, they sleep with a lot of women, but like, do you want to spend your whole life just like banging like drunk 23-year-old girls at bars? Like that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I have no judgment. And I spent a lot of my 20s, like, having a lot of just drunk random sex. But there was a point in my life where the pleasure of just like having sex with a random stranger was less than the pain of knowing that like I was not giving myself fully or the pleasure of just like, you know, just a random hookup was less than the pain of, yeah, of just not having something deeper or like not having someone to like really, really pour my heart into and like really open up and have like that crazy, awesome, deep connection, which ultimately everybody wants, like whether, even if you're fooling yourself, and I'll hear people who pretend like, oh, you know, I don't want that. Like, I'm all about just like banging chicks and, you know, and I've even met women like that, but I mean, really, I think you're lying to yourself. Like you want something more than just like the physical act. Because when there's nothing better in my mind than fully connecting with another human being. I mean, at a physical, like emotional, spiritual level, just like everything is connecting. And then when you engage in a sexual union from that place, then that's just like that crazy awesome cosmic sex that I guess like Sting talks about when he goes on Oprah. And that's possible. Like that is available to you as a human being, but it takes a lot of like courageous conversations and it takes a lot of opening up. For the men that I work with, like the stuff that I make them do is really just be open to the world and be open to their partners and have courageous conversations, and they hate me for it. And they're like, no way. There's no way I can tell that to my wife. And then they do. And they're like, we just had the best sex of our lives. And just like, I feel so connected to her now. And it's like, yeah, of course you do, because you're not lying to her. And, mm-hmm. and because you're being more open about stuff. And the more that I do this work, and the more that I grow as like a coach and a writer and an entrepreneur, the more that I realize and like I feel it in my body, just how, you know, just telling the truth all the time is like it's scary, but there's so much personal power that comes with it. Like I feel really powerful all the time. And that's because I just kind of speak the truth all the time, and it feels good because it's literally the opposite of what most of my life was. And it took a lot of really hard work, and I do not have it all figured out. So I think anytime a man says, you know what, I think I got it all figured out, or I think I've made it, like that's just danger. That's mm-hmm. when he's about to have a great fall, or that's when like he says to the world, you know what, I got it all figured out. And then he closes his mind and closes his heart, and then he just stops growing. So I never want to stop growing. Like when I'm 70 years old, I'll be learning how to be a 70-year-old man, and I'll be like, cool. Like this, like I just everything will be new. Just like mm-hmm. everything is new all the time. And like when I show up at an event, and like when I show up in a room, I always kind of like completely open my mind, and I always have complete beginner mind. Like even if someone's been like doing work less time than I have, or if someone's younger than I am, or like even if I know that I've helped more people, like that doesn't matter. That's just I learn things from people all the time, like kids, like my brother's friends. I'll hang out with them and they teach me stuff all the time. And I think it's really, really dangerous. And I think men do that a lot, especially when they've achieved a level of financial success, mm-hmm. where they'll say, yep, I got it all figured out. And that's a really dangerous place to operate from in the world, because you're not growing and you're not open to change, and you're not open to like new perspectives.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Mike, you know, it's really, this is amazing. I knew it would be a great conversation, and I'm actually really happy we had to record it a second time, because mm-hmm. I think you really packed this with so much insight into, you know, the way I see it is, you know, after hearing this, really our relationships are one of our greatest personal growth engines. And when I'm looking at my life, I'm seeing how true that really is. Is that, you know, how I've grown is through not just through relationships with women, but relationships with everybody. And that's really powerful. So I'm going to close with my final question, which, you know, you may have heard me ask before. Mike, in a world of this much noise, our show is called The Unmistakable Creative. How do you become unmistakable?
So I gave you a different answer the first time, but what's sitting with me is just depth. So on this second interview, we went a lot deeper than we did on the first interview. Mm-hmm. And in a relationship, like the sex gets better, like the more you're with someone, or in a friendship, like it just gets deeper and deeper the longer it goes and the more that you share. And I think just like depth is something that's almost a lost art in today's world of like instant gratification. And when there's dating apps like Tinder and OkCupid, where you can literally just like swipe right and swipe left and like pick a person based off of their, you know, it's like Amazon for humans. And there's almost this like lost art of just like going really deep with someone and sharing what makes you a human being, and being really present with someone and just like really just showing up for someone. So for me, it's like the people that I surround myself with are those people who are willing to go uncomfortably deep. My coaches and mentors and friends, like they're the ones who are willing to go uncomfortably deep. And when I say uncomfortably deep, they're the ones who are like willing to talk about like really edgy stuff, but it's like for the sake of our own development. So mm-hmm. when I think of like what makes you unmistakable, I think it's depth. Yeah. Like that's what I'm really sitting with today. It's depth and like the ability to go really deep. And I remember Meg Warden, you know, during the Q&A, someone asked her a question and she said, "You just have to learn how to just hold space like a motherfucker. Just, I mean, really, just really show up when someone's in front of you, or really show up to a coaching client, or really show up to like a podcast interview." Because there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of podcasts and there's a lot of writers and there's a lot of life coaches. And if you're trying to, if you're like using some script, or if you're like using some like template for doing your blogs or podcasts, or like a template for your life, then you're just going to be, you know, like you're just going to be a cookie cutter template, like the same as everyone else doing that thing. But if you just like show up fully, and just like give your gifts unapologetically and speak your truth and like love with all of your heart and be really, really, really present to the person in front of you, like you will stand out, and you will stand out in a room, and you'll stand out on an interview, and you'll just completely stand out because everyone else is doing what everyone else is doing. So today, as you asked that question, I think depth is what makes someone unmistakable.
Awesome. Mike, this has been really, really mind-blowing, and I'm actually very happy we had to do it a second time because I think it was a lot better. I can't thank you enough for joining us and taking some of your time to share your insights with the listeners here at Unmistakable Creative. I think people are going to learn a lot from this conversation.
Cool. No, thank you. Thanks for being an awesome guide, and and for everything that you created this weekend at the live event. It was just truly like one of the most amazing things I've been a part of. So yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you for bringing depth into everything you do and not settling for crap and making us do another interview. So I got a lot out of it. So thank you.
Awesome. And for those of you guys listening, we'll wrap the show with that. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative has been brought to you by FreshBooks, the simple accounting solution for business owners who want to skip the headaches of tax time. No more hunting for receipts, digging for invoices, or going through records one at a time. For a limited time, you can try it free for 60 days. That's 2 whole months to see how much more efficient it will make you. Visit getfreshbooks.com to learn more. And remember, enter Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And don't forget, when you support our sponsors, you support our show.
You've been listening to the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. Visit our website at unmistakablecreative.com and get access to over 400 interviews in our archives.